In the 10th chapter, we have a number of statements by Joel, all of which relate to, "It shall not come nigh thee." If you abide in the secret place of the Most High, which is the knowledge that God is present where I am, where everyone appears to be, God is. Now let's look at some of these statements. A person who leaves his home in the morning has no positive assurance that he will return safely at night. Man has become a statistic. And how then can mishaps and catastrophes be avoided? Is there a way? And he says, yes, there is. There certainly is a way. Break through your mental inertia in the morning. And he emphasizes in the morning. In other words, it's not 2 hours after you get going. In those 2 hours, the world mind has got you trapped. Break through your mental inertia in the morning to consciously realize there is one power operating in this universe. That, of course, is the power of God. It is operating. God is present. God is the power operating. And what you're seeing, therefore, which is unlike the power of God, is your temptation. It isn't what's there, it's your temptation. There is no power in any mesmeric suggestion of accident. Now, catch the words. The suggestion of accident. The mesmeric suggestion of accident. He's telling you accident is not accident. Accident is suggestion. And the suggestion is a mesmeric suggestion. And there is no power in it. Meaning there's no power to cause that accident. I know all about the statistics. But there is no power to cause those statistics. It is mesmeric suggestion. Temptation being presented through the world mind in you to turn you from the belief that there is only the power of God present. That's what he's saying. And therefore you look at the accident which is happening in your mind. It's not six cars lined up on the freeway. It's the freeway and six cars all lined up in your mind. That's where the mesmeric suggestion is. And there's no power to cause that fact. And therefore it isn't a fact. The only power is God. That's the consciousness you're to develop. No power in any belief of infection or contagion. Same thing with infection or contagion. It's a temptation coming to you to make you believe there is another power beside the perfect power of God. And there isn't any other power. There's no power in the carnal mind. And the carnal mind is the world mind functioning in you. It has no power. It cannot create an accident. It can only create the appearance of an accident in your mind. And the only reason it does that is because you're not in the Christ mind. The carnal mind is the opposite of the Christ mind, and the Christ mind has no opposite. And so we look at the accident, the infection, all that is out in the world, and know it to be the picture in the world mind in me. I'm looking in the false mirror of my own mind. And I'm not going to accept another power beside the perfect power of God. There's no power in the carnal mind or in any of its forms or in any of its beliefs, whether individually or collectively. And so that's laying it on the line. There is no power to cause evil. Evil is an appearance within the mind of each individual person, placed there by our separation from the knowledge of the presence of God. This is the first step in the elimination of that separation. Your experiences, Joel, is going to be your own state of consciousness objectified. That which you have in your consciousness will be that which you experience as if it were out there. It will be objectified. It will come into material form out there, apparently, because it is in your consciousness in here. Your state of consciousness objectified is your experience. And if you want your experience to be harmonious, then your state of consciousness must be the conscious awareness of the presence of God. That will objectify as harmony. That will objectify as the qualities of God made visible. If you insist, however, on walking around all day without consciously living in the realization of God, the presence of God, the omnipotence of God, the omniscience of God here and now, the all and the only power, you will not bring harmony into your experience. So this is part of what we have today made our 7 points. This very second, God is being. We must know this consciously. Not knowing it consciously is the error. For when you're not consciously aware that this very second God is being, that is when you become the blotting paper for world thought that just flows right through you. God is being all that God can be. There's no way for God to change. God will be the same. God is the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. God is from everlasting to everlasting. Do not try to get God to do anything for you. God has already done it. God is, period. You see, the isness of God is the fact. God is. And always the world mind is saying God isn't. Look at this, this, and this. And that's where you have to tighten up and say, no, 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 I'm not looking at this, this, and this. God is this, this, and this invisibly. That's all that God is everywhere. I don't care what I see, God is. And so this is the tightening of that consciousness which won't be budged by the tempter, the appearance. And the minute you find that little word but beginning to creep up in you, but what about this? That but is the tempter again. There's no about this. God is, period. The but is that little wriggly human mind that won't accept that God is. Period. There's no anything else. God is. Protective work is the realization that there's no power from which to protect yourself. It is a living in the realization that because there's only one power, there are no powers to do anything or to be anything. And every suggestion of some other power is a mesmeric influence. Now he underlines a certain phrase here. Without this realization, even though you do not consciously think of accidents, of discords, of diseases, sins, or temptations, you are permitting yourself to unconsciously accept, to subconsciously or unconsciously accept the world's mesmeric and hypnotic suggestions. The moment you're not realizing that there's only the power of God present, in that moment, you open the door to the world mind flood of lies, even though you're not conscious of them. They capture your subconscious. They become the food that feeds your mind. And the rift between you and the presence of God just widens and widens and widens until this great big dragon appears called lack or limitation. Now we go into some of the mysticism of it. Is weather external to you? Now we all think the sun is out there, it's external to me. The sky is out there, it's external to me. It's not raining inside me, it's raining out there. But here's a question, is weather external to you? It's external to the false sense of you. If you're living in the sense of a human selfhood, weather is external to you. Is weather external to Christ? Is weather external to God? What's outside of God? Weather not being external to the Spirit of God, how can it be external to you? It's only because you entertain the notion that you're not the Spirit of God. And so the answer must be, no, weather is not external to me. Well, how can employment be outside of yourself then? How can lack or limitation be outside of yourself? How can anything be outside of you if everything is within the Spirit of God and you are the Spirit of God? And so this is to turn us to the fact that nothing is outside of you. It's just the right you that you have to know about. The right you, the Spirit of God, includes all it is. Then what is the unemployment? Employment is within the right you. To seek employment out there before finding the right you is trying to do it the hard way. It won't even be the right employment when you get it, because it has to be that which is within your spiritual self. It has to be that which grows out of the tree of life. The fruitage must come from the spirit of your being. So, the startling thing is that weather is not external to you. Weather is only external to the image called form, which we have learned we are not. We are that Spirit of God to which nothing is external. Nothing in the whole world is external to the Spirit of God, which is infinite. And in this identification, you can trust the power of that Spirit to manifest itself, to fulfill itself. You see how you're in God government when you're in yourself? The legal entanglements out there are for the human self. The spiritual self dissolves the seeming legal entanglements, because there is no power present but the power of your spirit. Even where there seem to be antagonists elsewhere. So Joel is opening up to the startling truth that nothing in the world is outside of your true spiritual being. Don't reach out for the treasures of the world that moth and rust will corrupt and that thieves will break in and steal, meaning time and space aren't there. Matter isn't there. A human lifespan isn't there. Your spiritual treasure is the knowledge that I am the life itself. That life which is the life of God, complete in self, seeking nothing in the world, but accepting these added things if they flow from my spiritual enlightenment. No, weather, says Joel, is an activity of the mind. Weather is an activity of the mind. The only reason we behold imperfect weather is because there is a belief in two powers, which makes for good weather and bad weather. His reason for stating that, this is followed by this statement. Some of us have proved that destructive and injurious forms of weather can be dissolved through the understanding that weather exists as an activity of the mind. Not the mind of God, mind you, the world mind and the mind of man. Anything that exists as an activity of the carnal mind exists as anything that exists as an activity of the carnal mind can be nullified in proportion to the degree of your awareness of these principles. So I've tried to give you those concise seven principles. These principles can nullify any activity of the weather or any activity unlike God. Tidal waves, storms, are quickly dissipated when someone knows and understands that they are not conditions of matter. See, they're conditions of the mind, which we think are conditions of matter, but they are not conditions of matter. Vast areas in storm and tidal wave, they're not conditions of matter, they're conditions of the collective mind. Activities of the mesmeric mind. And often, they stop instantaneously, because they cannot last long in the face of this realization that they are images in thought, and images in thought have no power. This sounds like a colossal thing, you know. I actually think it's harder to take care of a head cold than a tidal wave. It's really the same problem. One just has a vaster area in seeming space than the other. But mind you, these statements by Joel are not made from opinions. They're made from day in and day out work along these lines, in which every word was long proven by him. Weather is an activity of the mind. It is not an activity of matter. Matter is the appearance to the mind, which does not know that the weather is within that mind that perceives it as matter. This is a misperception. And when you face it as an activity of mind, that doesn't mean you're going to make it shine when it's shady. There's a word in here that's very important, destructive weather. If the weather is destructive, you have the capacity in your knowledge of these seven steps to change the weather. You're not changing reality. You never change reality. You're simply admitting into consciousness the power of God, in which there is no power of destruction, and destructive weather no longer is destructive. Really, it's no more difficult than taking care of a head cold. The scope of it seems bigger. It's no more different than taking care of any form of error or evil that enters your consciousness, because it's all made of the fabric of mental imagination. Only God is present. It never happens. Only God is present. That which seems to happen happens in the human sense of self, in those who have not yet learned how to crucify with Christ. These are the great secrets of the infinite way. God knows nothing, says Joel, about rain. You can get into many an argument on that statement. God knows nothing about rain. You remember in this chapter, I think it was in this chapter, Yes, he told about that city for 18 months that was deluged with rain. It never stopped raining. It was ruining everything. Nobody could function. And again, they called somebody. And that somebody, through the knowledge of truth, being able to rest in the principle that God is, and the power of God is never destructive, lo and behold, with the sky still gray and sullen, no rain. Only 3 days after the rain stopped did the conditions that appeared to be causing the rain disappear. But the rain stopped for 3 days before the conditions disappeared. Why? Because the collective mind of that city had rain. And the mind of one individual with God had only God. And the false mind came to the true mind and said, "Help us." And it stood in the silence of the presence of the Father, doing nothing but being conscious of the presence. And the presence could not manifest as destructive rain. It manifested as the absence of rain. So it was with every healing in the Bible and every healing that you are called upon to do. You never do it. The presence of God in your consciousness reveals the absence of error. There's a reminder, if I recall, that it doesn't mean because you close your eyes and say God is here and God is there that the errors disappear. He reminds us of the necessity for doing your work, and then if the situation doesn't yield, you've got to do it again and again and again. You've got to be as patient as the lie is until it yields. But the yielding will come, provided you will stand in the truth of that presence. This is another way of saying forgive 70 times 7. Stay there. You see, in unseeing the lie, you're forgiving. You're erasing the lie. You're wiping out the lie. This is forgiveness. You're forgiving a karmic debt. You're looking through the lie. You're forgiving 70 times 7 if necessary, until the lie is no longer visible, no longer objectified. All these things are the tempter. The temptation is a suggestion of a power and a person and a presence apart from God. Rejected in the realization that it is nothing but the fleshly mind, the carnal mind. Then dismiss it. And that's the end of it. It takes only a minute to consciously recognize within yourself that God, truth, being infinite, nothing else can enter. The hardest part is to dismiss it. We want to mull it over, you know. We want to revive those images. But sometimes, even though we try, there's something holds us to them. We keep saying, that error isn't there, that error isn't there, that error isn't there. Until we've actually almost made it appear there by the repetition of the fact that it isn't there. Get out of the negative side of it. God is there. God is there. The presence is there. The power is there. Until all idea of error is out of your consciousness. Because that's the only thing that makes the error appear. It's in your consciousness. When it's weeded out by the positive action of knowledge that God is there, then we have dismissed it. And when it pops back in again, you'll have to go back to the knowledge that only the presence is there. One point that should be clarified is that the error out there and the presence out there is always pushing you away from your consciousness here. You've got to see that God is present where you are first. Here, where I am, is the presence. Here, where I am, is no error. My consciousness here is the presence of God. I am conscious of the presence, and that's God consciousness. And in my God consciousness here, there is no error. And then over there, it will disappear. Because your God consciousness here is God consciousness there. You've got to have it where you stand, closer than breathing. Your consciousness of God, where you stand, does the miracle work. Even though the storm is over there, 3,000 miles away, you must have the consciousness of God here. And it will manifest as the absence of the storm there. The principles you are learning will eventually bring freedom to every individual on the face of the globe. So start observing what happens when you acknowledge His presence in all your ways. The miracle worker is the presence of God acknowledged by you, to which you crucify your human selfhood, until the presence of God you're acknowledging is your invisible self. And there is no second. Then it will not come nigh thee, the accident or the flood. And we're being pushed to this consciousness not to avert the disasters of the world alone, but those disasters are pushing us to the invisibility of our being, that we may establish the kingdom of heaven on earth as an objectified reality. I want you to hear a proverb, which might sound a little different now. It's the third proverb. We just started at the 13th verse. It sounds so simple, and yet what it's been trying to say to us all these years is very close to what Joel has been saying and what we've talked about during this session. Happy is the man that findeth wisdom, and the man that getteth understanding. For the merchandise of it is better than the merchandise of silver, and the gain thereof than fine gold. She is a more precious than rubies, and all the things that thou canst desire are not to be compared unto her. Length of days is in her right hand, and in her left hand riches and honor. Her ways are ways of pleasantness, and all her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to them that lay hold upon her, and happy is every one that retaineth her. The Lord by wisdom hath founded the earth, by understanding hath he established the heavens. By his knowledge the depths are broken up, and the clouds drop down the dew. My son, let not them depart from thine eyes. Keep sound wisdom and discretion. So shall they be life unto thy soul and grace to thy neck. Then shalt thou walk in thy way safely, and thy foot shall not stumble. All of it is telling us to be conscious of the presence of God. We had thought that this was all a moral thing. Be good, be virtuous. It isn't that at all. You can be upright, you can be good, you can be church-going. But if you're not in the secret place of the Most High, it will come nigh thee. We do not stumble when we are in the presence of God. And that presence must be your invisible presence, because there is no selfhood apart from God. The self of you that is not the invisible presence of God must be crucified daily until you are willing to accept, "Thou seest me, thou seest the Father." You cannot walk in the presence of God unless that presence is your invisible self, because that invisible self is the presence of God called Christ. It's the only way you are in the secret place of the Most High. The top secret is that you can only be free when you are Christ. Another assignment I'd like to suggest to you for this coming week is, please read the 91st Psalm. You'll find it's the same as this third proverb. Just another way of saying, unless you are in the conscious awareness of the presence of God as your very being, you're not in the secret place of the Most High. You're in a second self, a separated sense of self, a vulnerable self, a dying self that never existed and never can exist. And in that false self are all the problems that you have found. They do not exist when you practice your 7 points. Until God is your living Bible day in and day out. From this point, I think we have an opportunity to open doors in the 16th chapter of John and to let ourselves be moved into the deep peace of the presence. Out of the temptation of the mind into fidelity to identity. Whenever you run into a problem that you don't seem to be able to solve well, even when doing what we talked about today, remember, you're thinking about a visible you instead of an invisible self. When you come to the place where you know the invisible nature of all being, those insoluble problems melt away. Invisible self is the real self, the permanent, the eternal, the deathless self, now without problems, and there is no second. If you are going now to be with us later, suppose you spend another 10 minutes, and we'd like to make a little presentation to the Fosters. The idea emanated with Claire Balance and Lucy Beveridge, and Lucy, I believe, has probably written a little poem, although I haven't read it or heard it, and so Lucy's going to make the presentation to the Fosters.